नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 41, Text 43, and we'll read through a few verses. Tata Sudamno Bhavanam Malakarasya Jakmatu Todrishpasa Samutaya Nama Siddhasa Bhuvi Tata Sudamno Bhavanam Malakarasya Jagmatu Kodrishpasa Samutaya Nama Siddhasa Bhuvi In Sudamna of Sudama Bhavanam to the home Malakarasya of the garland maker Jagmatu the two of them went to them Drishtva seen sa he Samutaya standing up Nanama bowed down Siddhasa with his head Bhuvi on the ground. Translation: the two lords then went to the house of the garland maker Sudama. When Sudama saw them, he at once stood up and then bowed down, placing his head on the ground. We'll read through text 44. After offering them seats and bathing their feet, Sudama worshipped them and their companions with agya, garlands, pan, sandalwood paste, and other presentations. Sudama said, O Lord, my birth is now sanctified and my family free of contamination. Now that you both have come here, my forefathers, the demigods, the great sages are certainly all satisfied with me. You two lords are the ultimate cause of this entire universe. To bestow sustenance and prosperity upon this realm, you have descended with your plenary expansions. Because you are the well-wishing friends and supreme soul of the whole universe, you regard all with unbiased vision. Therefore, although you reciprocate your devotees' loving worship, you always remain equally disposed toward all living beings. Please order me, your servant, to do whatever you wish. To be engaged by you in some service is certainly a great blessing for anyone. Sukadeva Goswami continued, O best of kings, having spoken these words, Sudama could understand what Krishna and Balaram wanted. Thus, with great pleasure, he presented them with garlands of fresh, fragrant flowers. Beautifully adorned with these garlands, Krishna and Balaram were delighted, and so were their companions. The two lords then offered the surrendered Sudama, who was bowing down before them, whatever benedictions he desired. Sudama chose unshakable devotion for Krishna, the supreme soul of all existence, friendship with his devotees, and transcendental compassion for all living beings. Translation: not only did Lord Krishna grant Sudama these benedictions, but he also awarded him strength, long life, fame, beauty, and ever-increasing prosperity for his family. Then Krishna and his elder brother took their leave. Purport: we can see a clear difference between Lord Krishna's dealings with the nasty washerman and his dealings with the devoted florist Sudama. The Lord is as hard as a thunderbolt for those who defy him, and soft as a rose for those who surrender to him. Therefore, we should all sincerely surrender to Lord Krishna, since that is clearly in our self-interest. Thus in the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 41st chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Krishna and Balaram Enter Mathura. So we're writing the board. Who's writing the board? Next chapter, text 1. So, now, Krishna and Balaram, it's mentioned earlier that Krishna and Balaram had this desire to go to Mathura. They were, of course, living in Brajdham. But we know in the spiritual world that Brajdham, Turudham, Dorkadham, they are eternal abodes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the Lord is manifest in each of these places simultaneously. He is there in the Nandanandana and Yasodanandana in Brajdham, and in Mathura, Devaki Nandana, and so on, simultaneously, and in Dwarkadham, in his royal position as king. So he's existing simultaneously, and of course, he is there with his brother, and he is there with the in Dwarkadham, he is there with the Pradyumna, Aniruddha, there's Vasudeva, there's Sankarshan, there's the Chatuvyuha, and throughout the Vaikuntha also, all the different planets of the Vaikuntha. There are so many unlimited planets of the Vaikuntha there also. There is Pradyumna, and Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha, and in all the different forms of the Lord, he's expanding himself in so many ways. This is Krishna. He is unlimited. We cannot understand all these things fully, even in the liberated stage. Indeed, we are just in the Perth temple, and we were reading how Uddhava, the great devotee of Krishna in Dwarkadham, he was asking Krishna, I want to hear of your opulences and your manifestation, your energies, how everything is going on. And Krishna said, yes, Arjuna asked this same question. And also Markandeya Rishi, he wanted to know specifically how the material world is coming, how there's pralaya, he wanted to know. Arjuna asked, Vistadana anajogam vibhutim chajananana bhuyakataya triptihi sinbhanasti mimritam. Please tell me of your opulences and powers and energies, for I never tire of hearing your ambrosial words. So Arjuna wanted to, he wanted to ask this, he asked the same question of Krishna. Uddhava asked the same, please tell me of your opulences. And Krishna replied to Arjuna, Hanta te kati yisyami. Yes, I will tell you, but only of the prominent ones, because my opulences are unlimited. In other words, you will not understand all of them. Even you are a great devotee, you are a liberated devotee. Uddhava, both Uddhava and Arjuna were liberated devotees. Still, Krishna said that I will describe the prominent ones. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes his different opulences and energies to some degree. And in Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna describes a little bit more to Uddhava. You can read there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's not that we can understand all these things, even liberate. What to speak of condition? So in this world, we have the Vaikuntha realm, and then Krishna expands himself into, we're just reading in Adi, about the Mahavishnu, the gigantic form of the Mahavishnu, Karanalakshaya Vishnu. Gigantic, huge. That even the universes are coming from his pores, his breathing. And so we are living in just one universe and one planet. And even we cannot know all the things of this one planet. So hardly we can understand in the condition state. So, but yet Krishna is doing all these things, and simultaneously he is knowing all these things. He is everywhere. He knows all these things, and he manifests his eternal abodes in this world also for our benefit. So, as I said, Brajdham, Turudham, Dwarkadham, even the Vaikuntha Dham, they are also manifest in this world, as Svetadvip. There are said to be the four Vaikuntha dhams in each universe, in the north, in the south, in the east, in the west. So he is replicating and manifesting the transcendental dhams in this world, and also Brajdham, Turudham, and Dwarkadham in this world. Of course, the leelas are simultaneously similar to the leelas in the spiritual world, and simultaneously different. Nimitika. Nimitika Leela Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that these are occasional pastimes where Krishna punishes the asuras. Now here we're reading about different pastimes of Krishna as he came into Mathurana. That is also his eternal abode, but still he manifests different parts, leaving Vrindavan, although actually he never leaves Vrindavan. He's manifest in another form always there, but he leaves Vrindavan and then he comes to Mathura, and he meets the previously was mentioned the washerman. Who did he meet first? Anyone remember in the start of this chapter when he came to Mathura? Kubja? That's right. You can remember? I'll just read. Krishna Balarami to Mathura. Now, you saw Mathura, the description of Mathura was there. How what a wonderful city. And everyone came on the rooftops, the ladies and all the men, and were smiling at the Lord. It was like a grand entrance, Krishna's coming, and Krishna and Balaram coming to Mathura. But actually, the first person he met was the washerman. The washerman approached. Huh? As mentioned here. The washerman was, he was a dying the cloth, but this was he had the washing and he had his assistants, but all these clothes were the king's clothes. So Krishna, he said to him, he said, "No, you have some very nice clothes there, new ones and just laundered ones, freshly dyed ones. We have come to the city. Give us some charity, please. Give us some of these clothes." So of course, washerman, he was very antagonistic towards Krishna and Balaram. He didn't at all appreciate them. He said, "You impudent boys," he said. "Yeah, you're just accustomed to roaming in the forests. You're cowherd boys. You know, these are the clothes of the king. How dare you even think about asking for these clothes?" Yeah. And then he said, "Get out of here quickly if you know what's good for you. Don't beg like this if you want to stay alive." When someone is too bold, he says, the king's men arrest him and kill him, take his property. This King Kamsa. Kamsa was so cruel, so powerful a king. The washerman spoke brazenly. But of course, Krishna didn't appreciate. Now, it is said that Krishna is especially kind to his devotees, but he's impartial to all. He benefits all. Yet, he deals with everyone individually. So, for this particular washerman, he decided to reward him in a way that seemingly, externally, would not appear to be much of a reward. Who knows how Krishna dealt with the washerman? Can you remember? You just read it? He just with his fingers. Merely with his fingertips. His fingertips. It wasn't even a karate chop or anything like that. Like this? Was it? Must have been something like that. And he just with his fingertips, he just took the man's head off. Just fell on the ground. So this is very extraordinary. People have to practice the martial arts for the whole lifetime to know how to properly do the karate chop and try to inflict some harm on someone else. But Krishna, just with his fingertips, just goes like that. Also, we read with Ramahashana Sutta, Lord Balarama, just with the Kusha grass, he went like that. And also, wasn't it? Separated his head. Wasn't it? Just killed him. That's killed him. So we see that this particular pastime here, that he was, the washerman, he was killed by Krishna. Of course, anyone who's killed by Krishna That is very, very, he's a very fortunate person. In fact, you know, we have Bhishma Dev, he'd lived a long life in this world, and he was fighting at the Battle of Kurukshetra, and he wanted to be killed by Krishna. He was dreaming to be killed by Krishna, and when Bhishma Dev was causing all sorts of trouble, killing so many soldiers, and putting Arjuna into difficulty, and Krishna took up the chariot wheel and ran towards Bhishma. Bhishma put down his yes, come, kill me. He wanted to be killed by Krishna. He said, "This is now. I've been dreaming like that." So Bhishma, he wanted to be killed by Krishna. Actually, you get the liberation. Seemingly externally, how can Krishna do like that, killing? But he was demoniac, and previously, when Krishna and Balaram had come in to the into Mathura, you know, even brahmanas, as mentioned, these were brahmanas that got up and stood up, and standing along the roadway, honored Krishna and Balaram. The brahmanas had honored Krishna and Balaram, presenting gifts to them, yogurt, barley corn, pots of water, fragrance of sandalwood paste, all other items of worship. So the brahmanas, they understood Krishna and Balaram's position. And the ladies, they got on the rooftops to see Krishna and Balaram. They understood Krishna and Balaram's position. So even if the brahmanas can offer respect, you would think, well, why not the washerman? He's just a washerman. Yet he didn't. He was very antagonistic. So, of course, he's a special person, the washerman, and he's part of the Krishna Leela. But still, Krishna wants to show the world that these very demoniac personalities, he will not tolerate, especially they're giving trouble to others, giving trouble to the devotees. And as Vridhananda Maharaj explains at the end of the chapter, he says that Krishna, to his devotees, he is soft like the rose, but to the demoniac, he is hard like the thunderbolt. So he says that one who is intelligent, one who knows his own self-interest, surrenders unto Krishna as a devotee, rather than wanting to be the asura. So there are many who are taking up the position of asura. They don't like openly. You talk anything spiritual to them, you talk about Krishna to them, he doesn't like. He speaks, this is all nonsense. Krishna, he is not. Why you say Krishna is supreme? So now one could say, well, why is Krishna so concerned about this position of anyone? He is supposed to be God. He is supposed to be impartial. Yes, he is impartial. He is just giving you whatever you desire in conjunction with your actions in the world. He is awarding you. He is awarding you accordingly, your situation. So he's impartial. Whatever the result must be for this action and this desire, then Krishna is awarding. He is awarding to everyone. And ultimately, he is going to bring everyone back home, back to Godhead. I remember Prabhupada, he said that here in Melbourne. And when questioned on this, Krishna is supposed to be impartial. He is rewarding everyone. And everyone follows my path in all respects. One person, he said, quoting from the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada said, everyone, and the person actually doesn't mean it, everyone will go to Krishna. And Prabhupada said, yes, everyone will go to Krishna eventually. And Krishna's desire is like that. Everyone eventually will go to Krishna. But what often, the Mayavadis, they are fond of, they're fond of quoting one half of this verse, but they don't like to quote the other half, which means, everyone follows my path in all respects, but as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. This is the first part. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects. So, they quote the second, but they don't quote the first. So, everyone follows my... Yes, everyone, Krishna's idea, his desire, that everyone comes back home, back to God. Eventually, everyone will go back. And Prabhupada said, yes, everyone, eventually. He said, just like I can go to the skyscraper building, 50th story, I can walk the stairs or I can take the elevator. Now, which one I want to take? You can walk the stairs and maybe by the end of the day you'll reach the top. Or you can take the elevator and go immediately there, he said, immediately you'll be there. So the devotee immediately comes to Krishna. Whereas others, oh, they have to, according to... So God has the plan for everyone. But he doesn't force, he is impartial. To force is not... He wants the love. He wants to reciprocate with our love. So if someone was to... Even if anyone tries to force anyone else, it's not very good. There's an old English saying, he who is forced against his will is of the same opinion still. You understand? Someone forces, you may externally overpower someone and make him do something, but within himself he is still thinking the same thing. This is the meaning of this. So there's no love, there's no actual deep love there, and this is the essence of our natural position, our spiritual position, our rasa with Krishna. The essence is that, the love, prema. Praying, as I was reading in Perth, from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, about Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan activities. When Lord Chaitanya and his associates were dancing and chanting, one time Lord Chaitanya, when he was in Jagannath Puri, there was a Rath Yatra festival coming, and all the devotees of Bengal, Lord Chaitanya told all the devotees from Bengal, you come every year here for the Rath Yatra. So the devotees were coming, Advaita Acharya and Haridas Thakur and Srivas Thakur and so many devotees from Bengal were coming. Gopinath Acharya had gone up top of the building and with Maharaj Prataparudra, and he was describing all these devotees. You know, here is Advaita Acharya, here you see Haridas Thakur and Srivas. All the other, he was describing one by one. And Lord Chaitanya had sent Swarup Damodar Goswami and Govinda to greet each one of them and garland each one of them and touch their feet. As they were walking, they were doing the Sankirtan. And Maharaj Prataparudra, he said, this Sankirtan is... I've seen many devotees come and go here from Jagannath Puri, he said. Many are doing the kirtan. I've heard many kirtan. But this kirtan astounds my mind, what I'm hearing. And the sight of these great devotees, they are effulgent. It is, my mind is overwhelmed. What is it that is different? This sankirtan is not ordinary kirtan, he said. He said, this is what's called prem sankirtan. Not just sankirtan, but prem sankirtan means, love of God sankirtan. You can imagine. We are dancing, we are chanting, we are having some love, but to reach the stage of prem, that is the highest. So these great devotees, when they do the sankirtan, when they do the kirtan, that is another thing. And Maharaj Prataparudra, he could understand that. He said, I've heard many kirtan, but this kirtan, this is something extraordinary. What is it? Prem sankirtan. But this is the essence of our relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Love, to develop our love. And Krishna wants to reciprocate with us in love. He wants to bring everyone closer and closer. He had to deal with the washerman in a particular way. But now we're seeing with Sudama, the florist. He is making the garland, so many garlands. Who was it after the washerman? It was someone, the weaver. There was a weaver of the cloth. He came forward. Now he was different again. He had great affection. So we see in this world now, some people, they are very affectionate to Krishna, to Lord Rama. They are very affectionate, very attracted. They are very pious. And Krishna says they're always in this world, in the spiritual world, not. But in this world there are two types, the Sura and Asura, pious and the impious. those who have the kritis, sukritinas, and duskritina. There's a difference. One is Naratama and the other is Naradama. One is sukritina or the other one is duskritina. One is, has the pious merit and the other one is miscreant. One is the highest person, the other one is the lowest person. One is sura, the other one asur. So that is the effect of the modes of material nature and our desires to enjoy. We're placed under that mode, especially those in the tamaguna and the rajaguna. They can be very strong asura. They cause trouble to everyone else. They cause trouble to themselves. And they, you know, Krishna, the God consciousness, oh, they don't. This is asura. So some are like that, and some are very. The weaver came forward, he is a great devotee. He immediately appreciated. And he made some nice, with the cloth that Krishna Balana picked up from the washing, he made some nice arrangement for the Lord. And then, of course, they moved on, and Sudama came. Now, Sudama was another great devotee. And he came forward, and he offered prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He bowed down before him, placing his head on the ground. This is the sign of surrender. Place your head on the ground before someone. You know, this is why we do it. When we come into the temple room, we bow down before Krishna, bow down before the Guru. This is total vulnerability, isn't it? When you're totally vulnerable when you bow down, you place your head. You can, you know, that person can slap your head, can kick you on the head. And that means you are just surrendering. So people, I remember when I was a new devotee just coming to the temple, one person I came with, I asked how they liked coming to the temple. They said, oh, it's very good, but just bowing down. They couldn't, it's bowing down. It's too much bowing down. It's too much bowing down. It's not very natural to always be bowing down. But yes, it may be a little artificial in the beginning. We are forcing ourselves, but it's good for us. It makes us humble. Now we're not very humble, we're very puffed up. I am a big this, I'm a big shot. I have, like I was saying yesterday, I have a BA, MA, PhD, or I come in the high Brahmin family, or I come in the high royal family. I have a lot of money. Why do I need to bow down? I don't want to bow down. They should bow to me. Why I'm bowing, they who bow to me. So we think like that, we're very puffed up. So to make us humble then is required, yes. And you put your head with all the pancha anga, the five parts of the body, your head, your arm, your hands, or you can dandavat, totally like the rod going like the stick. We know in Vrindavan Dham and Govardhan Parikram, some are doing the Dandavat Parikram. Dandavat Parikram, you see them. Right? Still today they're doing Dandavat Parikram. They just fall flat and where their head goes, they start from there and then they go again. And they go, and they do the whole Parikram like that, the Govardhan Hill. So it's good to do like that. Because it doesn't mean, you know, I notice now with the devotees that every time someone goes jai, then they're bowing down. You ever notice that? Jai Prabhu, jai, everyone bow down. So it's not always necessary when we say jai we have to bow down, but certainly when we offer our obeisances to the spiritual master, we're bowing down. Come before the deity, we bow down, going into the temple, out of the temple. These times, all these things are described in the Nectar Devotion and the Hari Bhakti Vilas also. Went about how to bow down. This is good for us. We bow down before Guru, we bow down before Krishna. Humble. So anyway, Sudama bowed down, placing his head on the ground. He offered the Lord seats. and bathe their feet. Quite the tradition when you go anyone's home, they want to bring you and sit you and then bathe your feet and welcome you to their house. And he offered not only Krishna and Balaram, but all the Lord's companions, argya, garlands, pan, sandalwood paste, other presentations. The nice things. But not only Krishna and Balaram, but all those who were with, all the cowherd boys. See, so this is, we can see that Sudama very advanced. Sometimes the beginning devotees, they want to only worship God, but they don't give respect to the other devotees. When the guru comes with his associates to someone's house, the guru must be worshipped, and also the associates have to be received very nicely, not just the guru. I only respect God, but the devotees of God. In fact, yemi bhakta jana padana me bhakta stati jana mat bhakta na jee bhakta te bhakta me bhakta tamata. He who says he is my direct devotee, he is not my devotee. But he who says he is the devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee. As Krishna says. Adipura. So this is how, should be our mentality. We're the devotee of the... This was Lord Chaitanya's mood, Gopi Bhatta Kamalaya Dasa Dasa. Lord Chaitanya, he showed the devotee of the devotee of the devotee. 1,000 times the devotee of the devotee. So this is a very interesting point, how Sudama, you know, he offered all these things to Krishna Bala and also worshipped all the companions of the Lord. My birth has been now sanctified, he says, and my family free of contamination. Now that you have come here. So he is very honored that the Lord has come to his home. He is benefiting, his family is benefiting. This is the result of chanting Krishna's name, having great devotees come to your house. We know the story of Hanuman when Narad was running after him because Hanuman was singing and playing Narad's veena and singing so sweetly that the rock he was sitting on melted and the veena sank into the rock. And then he stopped singing and then just went away, and then Narad Muni couldn't get the veena out of the rock. So he called back Hanuman, come and sing again and melt the rock so I can get the veena. But Hanuman just ignored and just went home, and he walked past his father. He went in the house. Narad Muni was calling and he came, and his father's name, Katari, was it? The father of Hanuman, Katari was it? No, but on earth he's Katari, I think. And so he said, Hanuman, why are you inside? You're causing this great devotee Narad, why are you ignoring him? Come out immediately. But still Hanuman didn't come. So, that's alright, I will just go. And he went inside, and Hanuman went from room to room. Then he came out. Why are you causing so much trouble? His father said, that I just wanted to have the great devotee Narad come in every room of my house and bless this house. Just like when we're blessing the house. I remember Rupa Prabhu was Prabodhananda's new house in that area he lives?
Camden.
Huh? Camden.
What?
Camden. Camden, anyway, near Camden. And we did the housewarming ceremony, everything like that. And then after the Rupa had a kirtan party in every room of the house. He did a kirtan. He went room to room, had a kirtan. It was very good, very auspicious for the house. Every room kirtan, every room the devotees go. So you're benefited, your house becomes auspicious. You know, there's a Vastu Shastra that you buy a house, you buy lands, maybe not very auspicious. What to do? You can do some things according to Vastu Shastra, but the best thing, you go with kirtan, and big kirtan, every house, have devotees come. And then everything becomes mantra tastanta taschidram deshakala vastuta. It is mentioned that where your holy name is chanted, And all the things become auspicious. The time becomes auspicious. The place becomes auspicious. The vastu becomes auspicious. So, Sudama was feeling very fortunate that Krishna, imagine Krishna and Balaram come to your house, all the cowherd boys come to your house, right? You know, I'm benefited, my house, my family is benefited. My life is sanctified. My birth is sanctified. The purpose of my life is now very good, very sanctified. Because the purpose is to understand Krishna, and he was Krishna. So Sudama is feeling, you are the ultimate cause of the universe. To bestow sustenance, prosperity upon this realm, you have descended. You are the well-wishing friend, the supreme soul of the whole universe. You regard with unbiased vision. You reciprocate with your loving, your devotees' loving worship. We've been talking about this. Yet you remain equally disposed to all living entities. We should always remember, God is not biased one against the other. Whatever God does for you is good for you. Just like the father has to sometimes discipline the son. Now he does it, why? Because he hates the son? I hate my son, therefore I want to. Sometimes in the world some fathers can be like that, but generally the father disciplines the son out of love for the son. He has to correct him. Just like in the school, the student is not so good, he is creating disturbance, the teacher has to discipline. Sometimes he has to give the hard test. Why? Because the teacher is mean, he hates you. No, he's trying to bring you up in your education. But God, sometimes he has to do like that, to correct someone, to ultimately bring them up. So he is not biased, we should understand this. So Sudama spoke these words of praise and he presented the Supreme Personality of God with some flower garland, fragrant flowers. Krishna and Balaram were very happy. He gave garlands to all the companions of the Supreme Personality of God. And he said to Sudama, Krishna said to Sudama, whatever your benediction, I'm prepared to award you anything. Now, interestingly, what did Sudama want? Sudama could, now here is God saying to you, whatever you want, I'll give to you. And God can give you anything. He is, from him everything comes. He can give you unlimited riches, unlimited anything you want. People dream of this. Someone can just give you whatever. They dream, you know, they dream, they go and put money, they buy the lottery ticket or something and dream how they're going to win all the money. They'd be able to do anything they want in the world. They dream of being able to do anything. So he could have asked, but what did he ask for? He said, unshakable devotion for you. You see what an advanced devotee he was. Unshakable devotion for you. Not what else? Friendship with the devotees. He considered these the most valuable. Other things he didn't consider very good. The money, the this, that. He didn't want. He didn't want any of this. He said, friendship with the devotees and an unshakable devotion to you and what else? Transcendental compassion for all living beings. This is a real devotee, isn't it? He is not only thinking for himself. Even one can think, well, maybe he's a bit selfish, just he just wants his own devotion. He wants his own friendship with the devotees. But no, he's saying that I want to have compassion and transcendental compassion. This is interesting also. There's a difference between mundane compassion and transcendental compassion. Mundane compassion we see all over. You know, oh, you want to save the whale. You want to save the whale, but just like here in Melbourne, there was that big violent demonstration against the G20 conference they had here. Yeah. Well, finance ministers from all over the world came and their big conference, and then they had all the big protest that came and turned, and they're complaining, oh, they're not doing enough. These are the powerful men that control the money of the world, and what are they doing for the poor people? What they're doing for the environment? What they're doing? They're thinking they're being compassionate, but you know, probably not one of them is a vegetarian or anything like that. So, see, so selective compassion. Save the whale, but kill the chickens. They have all these causes, people these days have all these causes, you know. Save the dolphins, save the tree, let's save the trees. But kill the kangaroos, kill the rabbits. Very selective compassion. So this is mundane compassion. And it changes. Let's save the trees and tomorrow let's save this. But yet, you know, we use so much paper and this and that and the other thing. But isn't it? So this is mundane compassion. But transcendental compassion means all the living entities. Human beings, the fish, the trees, we are designed to help them all. To try to protect them as far as possible and help them also spiritually. Help them spiritually. Just like misplaced compassion, just like the case of who was that Muni who lived in the Jamuna River? Subari Muni. He lived there and he was now. He was living in the and what happened? What is the lila? Subari Muni was living. Huh? Yeah. Garuda was coming there. He was meditating under the water. Subari Muni, right? Just meditation. And then one time he saw the fish were swimming very fast in a fray. And why Garuda was coming there? He was taking the fish, eating the fish. Now, Garuda, he's not vegetarian. He's eating the fish. But he's a specialist. So he became angry at Garuda. And he cursed him. He said, if you ever try to come here again, you will die. So, but what happened? Huh? Garuda didn't come anymore. He wanted to. He could have come, and done, but he, to respect the Muni, he didn't come. And what happened after? Kaliya came there. He knew. Oh, Garuda. Garuda. He was afraid of Garuda. And Garuda doesn't go there. I will go there. But when Kaliya went there, he was a very poisonous snake, and he had fumes. Very toxic snake, and all the fish died anyway. See? So here, Subari Muni was trying to protect a few fish, one or two fish that Garuda was eating. Then, because he did like that, and this is a great offense, a great against Garuda, he was a direct associate of the Lord, to curse an associate of the Lord is a big offense. Anyway, he did like that, but his purpose was to save a few fish. Kaliya came there, and not only one or two fish were killed, all the fish were killed. So you see, misplaced compassion. You think you're being compassionate, but in the larger scheme of things, you know, quite often you make a disaster. You make more trouble than what you started to try to solve the problem. You made more trouble. You don't know exactly what the bigger picture is, and with your small limited view, oh yes, we will make the solution here, we'll make things better here, but you're limited. But actually, in the long term, it is, you know, just like, you know, with the I remember Pralananda Maharaj gave a class, and he said, just like initially, when they manufactured cars, they were promoting, oh, the cars will make everything so much easier now. Before, everyone was walking and also taking the horse and the bullock everywhere, and this all this dung falling in the street is creating so much problem. And now with the car, well, it's so much easier. So they're promoting the car back in the turn of last century. And the car was a new thing. And so they were promoting. And then, but now what has happened? We're taking away the horse and the bullock and we cleaned up the streets from the cow dung and everything like that and the horse dung. But now, we've got so many cars, we've got so much pollution, we've got the global warming, we've got all these things, right? You cannot even breathe practically in some of the big cities. Hard to, you know, eyes are hurting. And to go far, and then not only, you know, you don't go any faster anywhere because you're caught in the traffic jam, you're actually going slower. Many of the big cities are like that. One time I was going in Jakarta, I was going to our Puncak temple outside Jakarta, and unbeknownst to me, I arrived there on Friday afternoon, but it was a long weekend, the holiday Monday. So we were going, Vasa Puja picked me up, and we were going to Puncak, which is normally about an hour and a half away, but then we were stuck, it took us 8 hours to get there. And we were sitting in the traffic, and it was really hot, and I was getting more and more annoyed. Ah, better we turn around and go back. I mean, we can't go forward, can't go back, stuck. Gridlock. And he said, Maharaj, this is nothing. He said, sometimes people stay overnight here, they don't move. They don't go anywhere. They started off to go on a long weekend holiday, but they didn't get to their destination. So they quite often they know that, and they just to bring their chairs and everything like that, and they just set up outside. There's people walking up and down the road selling things, and that they have their weekend like that outside the car. He said this happens quite often. He said big holidays. Because so many people want to get out of the city, they're just stuck. They can't go forward, can't go back, can't make any decisions. They just stay there. And some people know that. They bring their chairs. They sit outside, buy the thing, they talk. And then when it gets a little bit less, they go back home. So this is the modern solution to the problems of life. So you know, we try to make things better, but quite often we make things worse. We try to have compassion, but it's mundane compassion. Quite often, it makes more trouble. And so, transcendental compassion is knowing what to do, the right thing to do, spiritually, for everyone. So this was Siddhartha. He wanted transcendental compassion. Now, Krishna granted him all these things, but not only that. He awarded him strength, long life, fame, beauty, ever-increasing prosperity for his family. Now, why would Krishna... materialists dream of these things. Oh, you know, to be strong and healthy. You know, people dream. And to have a long life, to have fame, beauty. Oh, people kill to have beauty. Beauty, to have, be handsome, to be beautiful, to be strong, to be healthy, have a long life, prosperity, have a lot of wealth. Why did Krishna give him these things? Do the materialists have these things? What is the difference? Why did Krishna give him? Why didn't Krishna just leave it at what he wanted? The Krishna gave him all these things, just like the materialist wanted all these things. Why did Krishna give his devotee all these things? He'll utilize these. The Krishna wishes to have a nice life for his devotee and live nicely in the world. And he is not concerned because he knows his devotee will use all these things in his service. He is not going to be deviated. Whereas the materialists, they get the beauty, they get the fame, they get the money. What do they do? They engage in some simple activities. As soon as they get money, oh, gambling and sinful activities. Cause trouble in the world with your money. So Krishna doesn't, he gives, you get because of your karma, but then it goes, you'll lose it again. But for his devotee, yes, he wants. Oh, may you have a long life. You know, Prabhupada was like that. He wanted to see his devotees nice and healthy. He was concerned when someone was sick. He wanted to have a nice life in the world, but use it properly in Krishna's service. Krishna and his elder brother took their leave. So here in the purport is mentioned, we see a clear difference to how Krishna treated the washerman, and how he treated the weaver and the Sudama, the florist. Soft as a rose for the surrender, just like Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj, Lord Nrisimhadeva was ferocious. No one could even go near him, they were afraid. But Prahlad Maharaj, Lord Nrisimhadeva was very, he was soft. Soft like the rose. But to the asuras, hard like a thunderbolt. Nrisimhadeva to Hiranyakashipu. Lord Ram to Ravana. Doesn't tolerate any nonsense. Alright? Thus in the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the 10th count of 40, first chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Krishna Bhavan Intimatura. Any questions or comments? Yes, please. Sorry? In this verse? Which word you're talking about?
Well, in the first word, Bhavana means the outlook. So,
Oh, Bhavana.
In English, the word Bhava, which means the attitude, is to do with the outlook, like my house is managed. So, outlook, in that language, the word Bhavana, where it's
Tatasudamno bhavanam. So, different words are translated differently. You're asking about the translation of the word. Yes. Well, I mean, depending on the situation of the description of what's going on, the different words can mean different things. Bhavanam can be, bhava, according if it's got the long over the bhav and or short bhava. It can be the world, or can be love, or can be my home. So, tata sudamna bhavanam. So I don't know exactly what you're trying to ask, but, sometimes the words are translated to mean different things, according to put in the context of the text itself. So therefore you have different translations of the words according to the context of what's being spoken. That's in any language like that. We have in English the same thing. One word, if it's used in this way, it can mean this thing. If used in another context, it can mean another thing. That's also in Sanskrit. In the dictionary you'll have also, the word, the primary translation, secondary, third, fourth, fifth, every language the same. So therefore, Prabhupada used to criticize the Mayavadis. They would translate the Sanskrit. And instead of using the prime, they would sometimes pick secondary or third, and then string it all together and come up with a whole different meaning, because instead of using the prime, they're using second and third to suit their own purposes. Mm-hmm. So this is a disingenuous translation. So Bhavanam in this particular case means it's Ridhananda Maharaj translates it in that way, to mean like that. Yes? So are you trying to understand the... Say again, the sinful act. I'm not to answer that. What's the nature of the question?
She's asking why it's a great soul.
Oh, for his disciples, that was, he's getting, why he left the world like
that? Yeah, because
Krishna gave prosperity. You mean in this case, he gave Siddhartha, and for someone else he takes them?
Yeah.
It's difficult to understand, because Krishna is dealing differently, with this particular devotee. He decided that, not only he was going to reward this benediction, but he was going to give long life. But, Krishna has different plans for different devotees. So, one devotee wants to live in the world, to do other things. Another devotee he wants to bring back to him to engage in other activity. So therefore he arranges how he can leave the world. So when we're looking at it, we're thinking, well, how is it that, you know, why doesn't Krishna give a long life to such a great devotee like Bhakti Tirtha Swami or someone else? And we see here this is the case. Well, Krishna has his long-term vision for everyone, and he has his desire. So he may have wanted to take Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj somewhere else for preaching somewhere else, so he had to wind up his earthly pastimes. Most probably he is preaching some other place with Prabhupada. Now this particular devotee, he wanted to continue on in the world a little bit longer. So therefore, to do that, you get the longer life. You know. So we're looking at from our angle, but from Krishna's angle, he is seeing the bigger picture. Out of ignorance. You have to give them the higher taste. Then, you know, you can give them some nice prasadam. Why don't you try these things? Give them curd pakora or something like that. You have to give them something better. Otherwise, they won't give up the meat eating and these things. You have to give them, explain to them what are the bad effects of the meat eating, and then say why it's unnecessary. Why don't you just eat these nice foods? You'll be more healthy and also nicer tasting. So no one, because of ignorance and because of their conditioning, they're just brought up in the society to eat these things. They don't know anything. So you have to explain to them these things are not good to eat and all these things. So.
Huh? It's a very asura mentality.
Yeah. So you have to purify their asura mentality. And they can be purified. Let them hear the chanting, let them taste the Krishna prasadam, let them associate with the devotees, let them understand what is the philosophy of this teaching of Krishna. And then gradually. Of course, you cannot force, but you try your best. You try your best to help them. Now, ultimately, up to them. They want to be very foolish. Jai Om Guru Sri Srila Prabhupada Ki.
Jai Om Guru Sri Srila Prabhupada Ki.